okay, a sex accident. More than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other sex addicts precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book and of this group. For them, we hope that these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the addict. Many do not comprehend that the addict is a very sick person, and besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. And my name is John Atkinson. I'm a grateful sex addict. Glad to be here tonight, and I'm going to go ahead and introduce Ken Clark, my sponsor, and glad he's doing this for us this evening, and give him a nice warm applause.
Okay, guys, we're not going to waste any time. There's a lot of ground to cover tonight, and that's a poor marker to start it with. There we go. All right, I didn't quite finish the foundation stuff last week. We're going to cover some basics of AA history and discuss why we do the steps this way. Okay, 1935, AA is founded with Dr. Bob's last drink. Okay, Bill Wilson found Dr. Bob, showed him how to do the work. Dr. Bob's last drink marks the birth date of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay. 1939, the Big Book is published. Okay? Right? They wanted to document how they did this because already they were getting a little off track. And they wanted to write down precisely. So the entire fellowship looked at what Bill W. was writing and said, no, this is wrong. Yes, this is right. It turns out, if you turn to page 100, or not 100, the title page, it says that it is the experience, it's based on the experience of how 100 people got sober from their obsession about alcohol. Okay? So it's authored by the first 100. Okay? It's written by Bill W., mainly by Bill W. There are parts of it that were written by other people, but the authors is the first 100. It's based on their experience. Okay? All right. Up until 1955, when the second edition was published, they reported to us exactly what their results were, working steps this way. And if you turn to page 20,
third edition.
Yeah. Should be the introduction to the second edition. John, would you read there, starting like the third sentence down?
The percentages?
Yeah.
It says, of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses. Among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. Other thousands came to a few AA meetings that first decided they didn't want the program, but great numbers of these, about 2 out of 3, began to return as time passed.
Okay, you put in a qualifier there, those who really tried. What does that mean, really tried? What it means, all of those guys who had that kind of success rate finished the steps within 45 days. 1 through 12, 45 days, bing, bang, boom. That got them 75% success rate. 75% success rate, okay? That's the first 20 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, first 20 years of the steps. That is the most successful the steps have ever been, is during those first 20 years, okay? 1953, the 12 and 12 is published. The 12 steps is authored by Bill W. It is his opinion on the 12 steps. Okay? He is the sole author of that part. The 12 traditions is based on the experience of the entire fellowship. It is written by Bill W., but authored by the entire fellowship. Has everybody got that? Okay. So, this is one man's opinion as opposed to 100 people's experience. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. Well, a lot of people really like this 12 and 12. They read it and they go, wow, this is really cool stuff. Well, because Bill could write. He could write like nobody's business. And the thing was, it sounded really cool, but it didn't contain any clear-cut directions. A lot of people really liked it because they didn't have to do anything. All they had to do was read it and wax philosophic about what the 12 steps means. They didn't have to actually do anything. Okay? 12 steps out of the AA Big Book has clear-cut directions on what to do. So, by 1965, as a result of this, AA success rates had dropped to 50%. Okay? 50%. All right. Late 1960s, 68 or 67, I can't remember which. Discussion meeting was introduced. There was a lot of people getting out of rehabs. They were doing a really cool thing in there called group therapy. Okay, they really dug it. They were showing up in AA meetings and they said, hey, I really miss that group therapy. Hey, we could do that ourselves here. Except to do group therapy, what do you need?
Therapist.
Oh, very good. Thank you. Well, there's no professional. That's against our AA tradition, is there are no professionals in 12-step. If you walk in this door as a therapist, when you're on this side of the door, you're either not a member or you're just an alcoholic, period. You're not a therapist walking through that door, okay? You're just one of us or an outsider, okay? So, discussion, hey, it's great. We get to sit around and talk about whatever we want. I get to talk about my day, my way, and whatever I want to talk about. What we're not talking about, what we're doing instead of working the steps, we're talking about John's vacuum cleaner or your boss. Or
my job.
Yeah. You know, we're talking about everything except how to work the steps, how to apply the steps so that I can stay sober. We got away, or Alcoholics Anonymous got away from the steps. They started talking about other solutions. Okay? The result was, by 1980, their success rates had dropped to 33%. Okay? They've been on the decline ever since. Nowadays, their success rate is right around 5%. Okay? Everybody clear on that? 1976, SAA is formed.
How do they know that it's only 5%?
That's based on the statistics from the Box 459, which is the, it's a report. Box 459 is from AA's General Service Conference. They report on various things to members and so on and so forth. That's their statistics, a study they did. It's also based on the chip sales out of the Dallas area intergroup, one-day chips to one-year chips. 5% of the people that walk in the door are still there a year later. Okay? All right. It's also based on Bob Bacon's paper and several other sources. But that's where they are right now. Okay? So 1980, they're on the decline, right? Okay? 1976, SAA is formed. It's based on this model of 12-step. Okay? It's based on a model of 12-step that's on the decline. It's failing. Okay? It's composed. The first meeting is composed of 8 therapists and a judge. I know my handwriting stinks, guys. I'm real sorry about that. Okay? But anybody get that? There's a lot. We have a huge culture of therapy in SAA. That's not an asset. That's a hurdle. It's a very high one. Okay? It's not an asset, it's an obstacle. It gets in the way of our recovery. Therapy is how I understand myself. And this book is quite clear. Self-knowledge does not get me sober. Therapy is about knowing me better. Knowing me better does not get me sober, period.
Okay. So,
here's some reflections on this. The original meeting in Akron, Ohio, never adopted the discussion meeting. Never. Their success rates remain 85% plus. Okay? Iceland, there's a big book group there. They only use the big book to study the steps, work the steps. They're focused on this program and how to do it. In, I think it was 2005, they had 100 guys come in. Two got drunk. It's a 98% success rate. It shows any group, no matter what your addiction is, if you're using this as your basic text for how to work the steps and sticking to it, you're going to have a better success rate than the groups that don't. Period. That's the way it is. That's what all the success, that's what all the studies show. This is the most successful approach to 12 step. If I know I'm dying of sex addiction, I want those eyes on my side. Okay? That's the number one reason. There's four reasons actually why we push the steps this way. Number one is success rate. Number two, let me see what my number two is. The number two reason, page 24, Mark, italicized paragraph. Can you read that for us?
Absolutely. The fact is that most sex addicts, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in acting out. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first sexual obsession.
Okay, guys, my insanity returns after a month. After I've got enough pain from my acting out, my last spree to keep me on the straight and narrow for a week. But after that week, the pain starts to subside, and I start to entertain these lurking notions. Well, you know, I could just look at this. I mean, everybody looks at that. I mean, hey, I'm a red-blooded American male. This is normal. And, you know, we got hormones. You know, this is God-given. If God didn't want me to have sex, why did he make it so pleasurable? You know? These are all little ideas that I start to entertain in my head. And if I haven't acted out before the month's over, I've got a plan in place. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay, that's the number one reason. That's the number two reason why I need to get through these steps and get to a spiritual awakening before the insanity returns. Number three, it provides me a model. Look, the steps are supposed to be a solution for every problem in my life. If you give me a model where I have to take months and months to work the steps, I better not have any more than 2-3 problems a year, right? Mm-hmm. I've got 5 or 6 problems a day that I need the steps to solve. A solution to every problem. It gave me a model to work the steps where I could, something pops up, I can do inventory real quick, pray to God, call my sponsor, apologize to someone I hurt, and then turn my thoughts to someone I can help. I can deal with any problem that pops up in my life, give resolution within 15 to 20 minutes. That's what working the steps quickly gives me. And the number four reason, you give me any time to think about these steps, I will. I'll try to figure them out. And quite honestly, guys, in step two, we're going to get there. Step two says I'm nuts. How can I apply a broke brain to an idea that has nothing to do with logic? Logic, the book said, logic is great stuff. But it doesn't lead us to a spiritual awakening. Okay? I'll try to think my way out of this box. If you give me time. I'll try to figure out these steps if you give me time. And that's the number one thing that stands between me and a spiritual experience is my brain. I need to get, that's my enemy. I need to get it out of the way. Okay, does everybody understand where we are on this thing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Let's see, that covers the foundation stuff that I missed last week.
Let's see. We're going to move on to step one.
And we're going to start with page 44. First paragraph.
CW, can you read that third sentence into the first paragraph?
If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if in acting out you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably a sex addict.
Okay. This is the qualifying part of step one. Step one.
It says, can I stop or moderate once I start? That's the last part of the sentence. Powerlessness.
Okay. What it means is once I before I start acting out, I have a clear-cut idea of I'm only going to look at this kind of pictures. Okay? But once I start, I most of the time tend to overshoot that and start looking at that other stuff. Okay? I have a clear-cut idea that I'm only going to spend this much money, but I end up emptying my bank account. Okay? I have a clear-cut idea that I'm only going to spend this much time in my addiction, and I look up and a whole day has passed. Okay? And I can give you lots of examples. We're not going to go there. We're going to talk about that afterwards, do the identification later. But that's powerlessness. What it means is once I introduce the chemicals, we talked about this last week, phenylethylamine, once I introduce addictive levels of that into my bloodstream, it triggers an allergy. And I have little or no control over where I stop. That's powerlessness. Now, guys, if that were my only problem, I wouldn't have a problem. I would just say, look, you know what? I can't do that anymore because I have no control over where I end up. So I'm just not going to engage in that kind of behavior anymore. And I'd be done with it. For the rest of my life, I'd be fine. I'd be set. Okay? But we have the second part of this disease, unmanageability. Okay? And what that is, that's the first, or the middle part of the sentence. Okay? And this is how I try to abstain completely. Okay? But I cannot manage the decision. Decision to abstain. Okay? Those two in conjunction. I have a mind. It always leads me back to my addictive behaviors. It's infallible. I mean, it always convinces me. It always gives me a little reason that I'll go back and start doing that again. Okay? Unmanageability, a lot of people think it's about I can't manipulate life out here. Well, you know, we're going to find out a little bit later that nobody can. Nobody can truly control life. And we have this idea that if we just control it right, we'll stop acting out. That's not what it's about. It's not about how things happen in my external world that make me go act out. I'm just nuts. I mean, you know, Chris Raymer loves to do this. He says, you know, how many of you drank when you were happy? How many of you drank when you're sad? You know, it says in the book, you know, it was the end of a perfect day. This is a guy who has the wife, the car, the job, the perfect kids, the perfect life, and it was the end of a perfect day and he still drank. Okay? That's the same with me and my sex addiction. Okay? Everybody got that?
Okay. There's a third element to this sentence
that's really important.
And it's the very first part. If when I honestly want to. Not if when my wife honestly wants me to. Not if when my job honestly wants me to. When I work with a new guy, I ask him, why are you here? Why do you want to do this? If he tells me, well, he got busted by his wife, I'm going to say, well, you know, maybe you married the wrong gal. You know, maybe you need a marriage counselor. He gets busted at a job, maybe you need a different job when you don't work on a computer. Maybe you need a different job when you don't work with girls. That's not what we're about. We're not career counselors, we're not marriage counselors, we're not lawyers if you're in trouble with the law. We're not therapists. If your therapist sends you here, this is not group therapy. We don't do that here. That's not what we're about. Okay? We're about working the steps in order to have a spiritual awakening, period. Okay? Now look, if you're not sure of either of these things, Mark, would you turn to page... actually, we're going to do a little exercise. If you're not sure of powerlessness, then you ought to write out some examples of how, before you acted out, you had a clear-cut idea of where this was going to terminate or how you were going to control it. But once you started, you went beyond that point. Mm-hmm. Write out a couple of examples. You don't have to do it right now. But this is a way for you to get a clearer picture of it. Okay? Now, unfortunately, if you're not convinced by just writing it down on a piece of paper, Mark, again, let's go to page 31, second paragraph. Start reading with that's down at the bottom. Read all the way through the end of that paragraph on page 32.
Start with despite all you can say?
Down, it should be down at the bottom of 31, the last paragraph.
Okay. We do not like to pronounce any individual as a sex addict, but you can quickly diagnose yourself. Step over to the nearest computer and try some controlled acting out. Try to act out and stop abruptly. Try it more than once. It will not take long for you to decide if you are honest with yourself about it. It may be worth a bad case of getting yelled at by your wife if you get a full knowledge of your condition.
Look, guys, you know, we're not in here to sell you on this idea that you're a sex addict. That's the disease's job. If you're not convinced, coming in the doors, go act out. Plain and simple. Okay? All right. You're not sure on your unmanageability? Write down some examples. Write down some examples of how you swore, I will never do this again. You look in the mirror, you make a solemn promise to no one else but you. I don't ever want to go here again, period. And yet, you find yourself back in it. Okay? If that didn't convince you...
Mark, if you would turn to page 34, the first paragraph, starting with the second sentence.
If anyone questions whether he has entered this dangerous area, let him try leaving sex addiction alone for 1 year. If he is a real sex addict and very far advanced, there is scant chance of success. Keep going.
Where is that?
That's page 34, first paragraph, beginning the second sentence.
Okay, go ahead.
In the early days of our acting out, we occasionally remained sober for a year or more, becoming serious sex addicts again later. Though you may be able to stop for a considerable period, you may yet be a potential sex addict. We think few to whom this book will appeal can stay dry anything like a year. Some will be acting out the day after making their resolutions, most of them within a few weeks.
Okay. CW, page 28, second paragraph, first sentence.
This goes to willingness, guys. Okay, just because you have this doesn't mean necessarily you want to do this. You know, honestly, guys, this is no fun. None of us that have been doing this for a while walked in the door, saw the steps in the wall, and said, I can't wait to do that. None of us saw step four and said, whoopee, that looks exciting, a moral inventory of myself.
Ooh.
None of us saw step 9 and said, I can't wait to talk to those people. I can't wait to see all those people I pissed off. None of us did. So why are you here? Well, let's take a look at that. CW, go ahead and read that page 28, second paragraph, sentence 1.
We, in our turn, sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men.
Okay, these guys are drowning. If you're drowning and you see something floating, do you stop and think about what keeps it afloat? Will it keep you afloat? No, you grab at it. You're desperate. You need the desperation of a drowning man. You have to understand, if you don't do this, you're going to drown. Okay?
Alright. Now, page 25, third paragraph, to the bottom of the page. CW?
If you are as seriously addicted as we believe there is no middle-of-the-road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible, and if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other to accept spiritual help.
Two choices. Two choices. Live in the solution or die in the disease.
And this is so important that Bill hit this four times. CW, page 44 again, second paragraph, second sentence.
To be doomed to an alcoholic or a sex-addicted death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to faith.
Two choices.
Okay, now page 44 down, next paragraph, third paragraph, fourth sentence.
But after a while, we must have to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else.
Two choices.
Page 53, second paragraph.
When we became sex addicts, crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else He is nothing. God either is or He isn't. What was our choice to be?
Guys,
if you don't understand that you have but two choices, go act out. You can die in the disease or live in the solution. Die or live. That's our choices. Okay?
We understood that at some point. You're still not sure? Let's look at your consequences. John. Can you go to page 24, second paragraph,
the first sentence?
There will be certain consequences that follow taking even a snapshot look at a foreign screen. Do not call it into the mind to deter us.
Okay. Mark, page 37, third paragraph.
In some circumstances, we have gone out deliberately to feed our sex addiction, feeling ourselves justified by nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy, or the like.
Okay, keep going.
Keep going. But even in this type of beginning, we are obliged to admit that our justification for a spree was insanely insufficient in the light of what always happened. We now see that when we began to act out deliberately instead of casually, there was little serious or effective thought during the period of premeditation of what the terrific consequences might be.
Okay. It doesn't matter what the consequences are.
Okay, guys, we've established. Once you start, you cannot stop or moderate. You have a mind that will not leave you, that will not let you leave it alone. Do a little consequences exercise. Take a look at what this thing has cost you. Write out a few examples of how you have dearly paid for this disease. Okay?
That doesn't convince you?
Go act out.
If you're not convinced, that's the truth. You have to go act out until it's just not any fun anymore.
Now the funny thing is though, even though it's not any fun anymore and you want to stop, if you're the real deal, you can't. It doesn't matter what the consequences are. No consequences are bad enough.
I'm what an Overeaters Anonymous would call a heavy eater. But being diagnosed with diabetes, I was given sufficient reason to stop or moderate. If I was a real overeater, a hopeless overeater, not even the diabetes would stop me. Okay? That's the difference. Okay, so this thing is also progressive in nature. CW, page 30, third paragraph, and the last two sentences.
We are convinced to a man that sex addicts of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better.
And that example does not qualify that as to if we're sober or not. We get worse even when we're sober. What we suffer from continues to progress, even if we're away free from the disease. And we're going to get to how we know this. This is important. John, page 31, paragraph 0, second sentence.
Right up there at the top, second sentence on the page.
In some cases, there have been brief recovery, followed always by still worse relapse.
Okay, look, you know, brief recovery. We get sober for a little bit, but when we go back out, it's worse. Mm-hmm. Guess what? The disease progressed while we're in that brief recovery. Okay? All right, Mark, go to page 32, second paragraph. The first two sentences.
A man of 30 was doing a great deal of spree acting out. He was very nervous in the morning after these bouts and quieted himself with more acting out.
Okay. All right. Now skip down to sentence 7 through 9. It's going to be about the hospital.
In 2 months, he was in a hospital, puzzled and humiliated. He tried to regulate his acting out for a while, making several trips to the hospital meantime.
Okay.
Then,
that's good.
Okay.
Okay. He had 25 years of sobriety from alcohol. And when he went back out, I mean, before he was just suffering from some nervousness in the morning, would drink a little bit, quiet his nerves. But when he went back out, all of a sudden he was in the hospital. Okay, that's kind of extreme. That tells me that while he was in recovery, while he was sober, his disease was getting worse. Okay, go now to page 33, the second sentence on that page.
Though a robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was a dead man within 4 years.
In 4 years of drinking, he was dead. Okay?
After
a progressive illness.
25.
Yeah. It's a progressive illness even when we're dry. Okay? All right. Here's an example. I mean, here's what you ought to do if you're not sure. You know, write down some examples of how your disease has gotten worse. How I went from looking at the lingerie section of the Sears catalog to the Fredericks, the Hollywood catalog, to the Sports Illustrated swimsuit, to the Playboy, to the Penthouse, to the Hustler, to the Oh My God. How I started with going to the chat rooms online, to doing instant messaging, to doing cyber sex, to making phone calls. Each step of the way saying, oh, I'll never do that. This is fine, but I'll never do that. And then I say, well, I wonder what that's like. And I try it and I go, oh, well, this isn't so bad, but I'll never do that. Right? Okay. That's the progressive nature of the disease. And again, if you're not sure, go act out. Try it. See how that works out for you. Powerlessness, once I start, I cannot stop or moderate. Unmanageability, I cannot manage the decision to stay away from it. It's cost me this much so far, and it's getting worse. Where does it stop, Ty? Where does it end? If I don't find a power that's going to stop me, how am I going to stop? Where will I stop? Mark, tell me, please.
In the grave.
It's going to kill me. I have two choices. Live in the solution or die in the disease. Those are my choices.
Okay. So, we turn to page 30, CW, second paragraph.
We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were sex addicts. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed.
Okay, that's the first step. If you're convinced, congratulations. If you're not, I can't convince you, only the disease can. Okay? Everybody cool on that? Mm-hmm. We ready for step two? Okay. John, turn to page 17 and read the title of that chapter.
There is a solution.
How many solutions?
One.
Okay, there is a solution. Okay, we're going to get to that. We're going to reinforce it a little bit. Mark, down at the bottom of that page, the third paragraph, read that whole paragraph.
The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution.
How many?
Oh, just one.
Just one, okay, go ahead.
We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from sex addiction.
Thank you. Okay, look, you get any five alcoholics in a room together, or five sex addicts in a room, you get any five addicts in a room together on one subject, and you're going to walk out of there with 50 different opinions. Okay? We can't even get going in the same direction with ourselves, much less a bunch of other sex addicts. But this is a solution which all of them agreed in harmonious action. Which also alludes to something else. This is not a program of talk. This is a program of action. It's a program of doing. Okay? We cool on that?
Mm-hmm.
Alright. Let's see. I'm not going to beat that horse. CW, page 27. The fourth paragraph. This is where we got the solution. Dr. Silkworth explained to Bill W. his theory on the allergic reaction. Once an alcoholic introduces alcohol into his body, he has no control over how much he continues to take into his body. It triggers a craving. Okay. Same with us. Once we start introducing the phenylethylamine into our body, we have little or no control over where the acting out ends. Okay. That's the phenomenon of craving. But the solution was given to us by Dr. Carl Jung through Roland Hazard. CW, why don't you read that fourth paragraph for us?
The one starting with yes?
Yes.
Yes, replied the doctor. There is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times.
Let me stop you. Why don't you go back just before that? So we'll know what he's saying yes to.
All right. The doctor, he said to the doctor, "Is there no exception?" And that's even before that, the phrase I have highlighted here is where the doctor's telling him, "I have never seen one single case recover where that state of mind existed to the extent that does in yours." So when he said that case, sure. So the guy asked the doctor, "Is there no exception then for a case like mine?" Yes, replied the doctor, there is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, sex addicts have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacement and rearrangement. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes which were once the guiding forces of lives of these men are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them.
Okay. The solution is a spiritual experience. Now, John, if you'll turn to page 90. Let's see, where is that? Page 95, the fourth paragraph, second sentence in there.
Mm-hmm.
Can I invite it?
Yes, sir.
Second sentence?
Let's see.
Third?
Is it last paragraph.
Fourth paragraph. Last paragraph, second sentence down there.
We have no monopoly on God.
Okay. Look, Carl Jung told us that there's a solution to this before the 12 steps existed. Okay? He said, you hear about it every now and then, people have these vital spiritual experiences. Okay? The book is very clear. We have no monopoly on God. Okay? The solution is a spiritual experience. There are other ways to get there. Salvation Army's been sober enough drunks for a long time. The Oxford groups, of course, they don't exist anymore, but I think they're in a different... they look differently now. They're the same thing, they're just different now. They've been sober enough drunks for a long time. This program came out of the Oxford groups. There was the Washingtonian that was very successful at it, but they don't exist anymore. This is just my best bet. Those success rates speak to numbers. I mean, that's the reality of it. Okay? So there are other ways to do this. And I have friends that are pursuing other spiritual solutions. More power to them. I hope they get there. I hope it works for them. I got no qualms about talking to them about it and seeing how they're doing and loving them just the same. But this is what worked for me. Period. We just have a solution that worked for us. The rest of that sentence says, we have no monopoly on God. What?
We merely have an approach that worked with us.
Yeah, you know, this is just what worked for me. I'm not telling you how to have a spiritual experience. I'm telling you how I had a spiritual experience. Okay?
All right. Mark, take us to the appendices 2, page 569 and a third. I think that's a third. The spiritual experience. Read the first paragraph there.
The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from sex addiction has manifested itself among us in many different forms.
Okay. Look, it's going to look different for everybody. Everybody's going to have their own experience with God in here. Okay? None of my business. I'm just trying to show you what I did in order to get clear, in order to get in touch with this higher power. Okay? So, that being said, whatever spiritual experience looks like, it doesn't matter. It's sufficient to remove the obsession. Okay?
All right. John, page 45. Second paragraph, second sentence.
Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself and to solve your problem.
Okay, and of course, go ahead and go back and read the first sentence.
So that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which is to solve your problem.
If this is an instruction book for working the steps, and this book's purpose is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, then the purpose of the steps is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself. It's not, the purpose of the steps is not to fix me. The purpose of the steps is not to control my disease. The purpose of the steps is not to control God. The only purpose of the steps is to right my relationship with God. Period. That's all it does. God takes care of removing the obsession. Because He chooses to. All I'm doing is moving under His protection and care. That's it. He chooses to shower me with that spiritual experience. Okay?
All right. Everybody understands that if I'm using the steps to change me, if I'm using the steps to control the disease, that's me applying my power, again, just using a different tool. Okay? If I'm using the steps to control God, then God is no longer a power greater than myself. I've just got a big magic wand that I can
turn God into this automaton to sick on the disease, you know? And that's not what the steps are for. The steps are only there to put me in a right relationship with God. Period. He then gives me the spiritual experience that is sufficient to remove the obsession. Okay? Everybody good on that? Okay. CW, page 45, third paragraph, fourth sentence in. Just that sentence, please. The next sentence too.
To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him which someone had tried to impress them during childhood.
Okay, look. Agnostics walking in the door are better off than most of us. Okay? Because they admit they don't know. They don't walk in the door with a conception of God already. They're open to new experiences already. Okay? Atheism, well, it's a belief system because there's no proof either way. It's still a belief system. A lot of us come in here with a belief system already in place in the form of a religion. I'm not saying that we need to abandon that religion. That's not what this thing is about. This is not a cult. And most of us in here practice a religion outside of these rooms. Okay? This program, all we're asking in the second step is, can we please take all the words that we use to describe God and put them in a little jar, put a lid on the jar, and go set it on the mantle and say, I'll get to you later. Because let's face it, guys, if God is infinite, then any words I use to describe God are a prison for him, at least in my mind. Okay? My job coming out of step two is not to have an understanding of God, but to understand that I don't know everything about God. You know, it's about sweeping aside prejudice. Okay, and it says this several times. This is another one of those points that Bill said was so important that, you know, he said it a couple times. Page 46. First paragraph.
Whole paragraph?
Yes, please.
Yes. It says, yes, we agnostic temperament have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we are able to lay aside prejudice and express a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commence to get results. Even though it was impossible for anyone to fully define or comprehend that power which is God.
Okay. Look, we're not asking you to walk out of step two knowing who God is. Let's face it, you're never going to wrap a finite brain around an infinite idea. It's not possible. You know, alcoholics who have been sober for decades, practicing this program with the strictest of self-discipline, even they do not understand God. No one does. No one will. And that's part of what step two is about, is that I need to understand that my place in this universe is not to understand God. God is the mystery. Okay? Alright. Let's see. Mark, page 47, first paragraph, third sentence.
Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you.
Okay. God is a word. You can make it mean whatever you want. I know what it means to me. You make it what it means to you. Okay? But what we're asking in step two is, can we please get these things that limit our concept of God out of the way so we can have a new experience. Okay? That's all it's about. CW, page 47, the very bottom,
through the next page.
That paragraph, or did that final sentence?
Yeah, the final sentence.
Besides a seeming inability to accept much on faith, we often found ourselves handicapped by obstinacy, sensitiveness, and unreasoning prejudice.
Okay, look, prejudice, spiritual prejudice makes me a spiritual cripple, period. In fact, any kind of prejudice makes me a spiritual cripple. Okay, that's what the message of the second step is I need to get my ideas out of the way and admit I don't know everything about God. Okay? And that's the only way I'm going to have a new experience of God. I'm not saying that we need to abandon our understanding of God completely. What I'm saying is that in order for we need to set them aside and allow God to define to us who He is through us doing this work. Okay?
All right. Let's see. There's a there's the set. Well, turn John, turn to page 570. The last two paragraphs there, and the quote with it. That's the spiritual experience.
That's a third edition. I don't know. You might have a fourth edition.
Spiritual experience.
Yeah, the last two paragraphs of the spiritual experience in the NCT.
Says most of the things, this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any sect addict capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation.
Okay, how am I going to learn something new if I think I already know it all? I can't. I got to be willing to have a new experience.
There's a set-aside prayer, and I didn't have time to print it up, but it's really good. When you go home tonight on your internet, use your computer for something good and look up the set-aside prayer. And it's a good prayer. It's not out of the big book. I don't require anyone to say it. But it's a good thing. It's a cool thing. It's how I mark almost the end of step two. Mark, why don't you turn to page 47, second paragraph.
Okay. Whole paragraph?
Yeah.
We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe, or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that, upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built.
Okay. Alright. And CW, if you would turn to page 48, the very top of the page, four sentences in to the end of that paragraph.
Faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. In this respect, sex addiction was a great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. Sometimes this was a tedious process. We hope no one else will be as prejudiced for as long as some of us were.
Okay. Look, and this becomes the theme of all the steps. Either accept spiritual health or go die in a disease.
So every step becomes that question. I can do a fearless and searching moral inventory, or I can go act out. I can go make amends, or I can go act out. Those are my choices. I can practice this step 10 and watch every day, or go act out. Those are my choices.
Guys, I know we're running out of time. I'm going to try and hit this step 3 real hard because we're going to have some assignments that go with this, okay? Let's see. John, page 58, second paragraph.
Our story disclosed in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, what we're like now. They've decided you want what we have and are willing to go any length to get it, and they're ready to take certain steps.
That's the critical question, guys. Any length? Are you willing to go to any length? What I have someone do at this point is read chapters 5, 6, and 7. And they don't have to memorize it. They don't have to have a working understanding of all the concepts in there. They don't have to understand the deeper ramifications. What they need to understand is, what they need to ask themselves as they read this is, am I willing to do what this book asks? And if they can come back to me and say, yes, I'm willing to do what this book asks, then they're willing to go to the lengths that I'm going to ask them to go to. Okay? Alright? Does that make sense? Alright. That's the first part of any links. Here's the tough part. We in Sex Addicts Anonymous define our own sobriety. And so this is part of the any links. What links are you willing to go to? We're going to turn to page, we're going to hit a few others first. We're going to point out that on page 60, it says that the first requirement of step 3 is that we see that a life run on self-will can hardly be a success. What that means is that it doesn't matter if you're a sex addict or a not alcoholic, not gambler, not overeater, not anything. But people who spend their lives in pursuit of money never have enough. They're never happy, right? Mm-hmm. People who spend their lives, you know, you see them all the time. They got the perfect house, the perfect wife, the perfect children, the perfect job, yet they're fooling around on their way. These people may not be sex addicts, but they're not happy because they're pursuing self-will. Okay? We are prime, it says we're prime examples on the next, I think, next page it says we're prime examples of the self-will run riot. We suffer from this delusion that we can get happiness and satisfaction out of life if only we manage it well. Mm-hmm. Okay, we can twist life just right and we're going to be happy. We just exert our self-will a little more. And even when we see that we're being selfish and we try to exert ourselves to get rid of this selfishness, well, that's self-will run right. That's like pouring gasoline on a fire with us. It doesn't work. Okay? So, understand that self-will is our problem. Selfishness is the problem that we struggle with. And we have to be free of it or it kills us. Because selfishness is what drives our disease. Okay? We understand that? Selfishness is our real problem. Selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our trouble. John, page 14, bottom of the page, that paragraph through where it ends on page 17. Read loud for us.
Bottom of the page. Last paragraph.
Yes, sir.
My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works is dead. He said, how commonly true for the sex addict. If a sex addict fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely act out again, and if he acted out again, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that.
Okay, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
turn to page page 14, well, up at the top of that page, the first paragraph.
Simple, but not easy. The price has to be paid.
Now, guys, remember, these are some excerpts to remember whenever you're defining your sobriety. This is important stuff. You might want to make note of these things, okay? Mm-hmm. CW, page 74, first paragraph, last sentence. The rule is?
The rule is we must be hard on ourselves, but always considerate of others.
Okay.
John, page 77, the fourth sentence on that page.
Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and people about us.
Okay. Mark, page 85. First paragraph, sentences 5 through 7. Every day.
We are not fighting it? Starting from there?
No. The next paragraph down?
Oh, the next one down. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of
skip down to where it says every day.
Okay, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will.
Okay, so on Tuesdays, we ask God what His will is in our activities on Tuesdays, right? No, it's every day.
Well, on Wednesdays and Thursdays and Fridays.
So you're saying any day that ends with Y
right.
is when we have to do this, right?
Right.
And so it's just when we go bowling. No, into all of our activities, right?
Right.
Okay.
We're clear on that? Okay. Now, let's see. CW, page 86, first paragraph, the eighth sentence, or. You know this one.
86?
Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life?
Okay, guys, our job, I hope you got a theme from this, our job is to sacrifice self for others, to help other people. Our job, if we're not helping other people, we're supposed to be fitting ourselves to help other people. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, so now turn to page 69, CW. This is the real, this is amazing. You know, years and years before Sex Addicts Anonymous came to being, they wrote how we are to define our sobriety. Go ahead and read that. Now, this is the beginning of of Alcoholics Anonymous Sex Inventory. So go ahead and read that paragraph.
On 69. We reviewed our own conduct.
Yeah, our sex conduct.
Yeah. Over the years past, where have we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom have we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given, and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed.
Okay. Alright, and we're going to tie that in real quick. John, turn to page 62, second paragraph, sentences 3 and 4 on that. We had to be read?
Second paragraph, 3 and 4?
Yeah.
Above everything, we sex addicts must be rid of the selfishness. We must, for it kills us.
Selfishness is our problem. Selfish sex is what we're addicted to. Okay? So I have to ask myself, as I'm analyzing my behaviors over the past, I have to ask myself, is it selfish? Is it dishonest? Is it inconsiderate? Am I hiding it?
Is it something I would freely discuss?
Well, I wouldn't freely talk about my wife and I's life in the bedroom, but you know what? I'm not ashamed of it either. Okay? We're married. I made a commitment that I would only do that with her, and I did. Okay? So I can say that freely, that I'm faithful to my wife. Okay. I have to ask myself, with these other excerpts, other than the one that T.W. read, how am I defining my sobriety? Is this behavior fitting me to be of maximum service to God and the people about me? If it's not, I need to seriously question whether I need to be engaging in that behavior or not. Because chances are, I'm focused on self if I am. I'm only taking care of my needs, right? I'm not thinking about what I can do for others or what I can pack into the stream of life. I'm not thinking about anybody but me. Okay? And I've had people come to me and say, well, Ken, that behavior is such a comfort to me. So, John, why don't you turn to, you got a fourth edition there. I'm going to skip you and go to CW because you have a third.
Fourth.
You have a fourth.
I have a third.
You have a third. Why don't you read XXVIII, the fourth paragraph.
XXVIII.
Down at the bottom, men and women. Okay, well,
men and women.
Go ahead.
Men and women act out essentially because they like the effect produced by the chemicals. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from false. To them, their sex-addicted life seems only the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, discontent. Unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few hits, acting out which they see others taking with impunity.
Okay. Look, if this behavior is a comfort to me, I'm supposed to be getting my comfort from God from this point on. Okay? If this behavior is providing me with ease and comfort, I'm probably addicted to it. Okay? So, with that, these are your assignments. If you are going through the steps, you need to read chapters 5, 6, and 7 and ask yourself but one question. Is there anything in here I am unwilling to do? And then, using the guide I gave you, those excerpts, use that to define your sobriety. Is there a behavior that I am still clinging to which provides me ease and comfort, which is not being of service to others, which is selfish, dishonest, and considerate? And if it is, I probably need to put that in my definition of sobriety, that that's something I can't engage in. Okay? And in just that way, I can easily make my wife part of my addiction. If she and I are at odds with each other, we got no business in the bedroom. We need to be connected on another level before we close that door. Plain and simple. Okay? That's all I got. CW, would you close us out?
Page 164 of the Alcoholic AA Big Book.
Mm-hmm.
Our book is meant to be subjective only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But you obviously cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and for countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless and keep you until then. It is Practice Primary Purpose Group to offer desire chip to anyone who is wishing to start their journey to sobriety. Taking this chip indicates a desire to stop acting out for good and for all. Does anyone want to begin their journey tonight? If you would like to become a member of this group, please see Ken afterwards. Our seven traditions states each group ought to be self-supporting through their own contributions. If this is your first meeting of SAA, we ask that you be our guest. We're glad you're here and hope you come back and become a part of our lives. Announcements?
I don't have any announcements. Oh, did you bring that paperwork?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't want to just kind of...